the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And we welcome you back. Oh boy, another day cranking out the money advice. It's another day, another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. We appreciate you being here with us. I'm Johnny Dean. Professor Rick Plum is back here in studio with me. We're talking money strategies with you as we do on a daily basis. Going to start things off with a discussion on something known as sequence of returns risk. We sort of alluded to it a little bit yesterday. But sequence of returns risk, which sounds like some kind of advanced academic theory, but in reality, it is. No, I'm kidding. But in reality, it could affect your retirement portfolio if you're not properly set up to combat it. So sequence of returns risk. First of all, what is it? And why does it matter to you? Some other questions. How does it affect your retirement savings? It can. Is it possible to, quote unquote, retire at the wrong time? Well, possibly. But if you have a strategy in place, it may not necessarily hurt you. So we're going to tell you all about it, what it is, and all that with Professor Rick Plum. That's coming up in just a moment or two. If you have anything on your mind, any money topic that's important to you right now, you call us, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We'll answer your questions right here on the show. It's 877-752-6637. You can also email us at our website. It's wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Find the link that says find your answer on the upper part of the page. And, of course, we'll take it from there after you send us the email. Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner, back with me as normal from Lucia Capital Group. He's part of our nationwide team that we call the Brain Trust, here to answer your questions. You should keep in mind, too, that if you want to talk to any Bucket Strategy advisor about your portfolio, you just give the folks at Lucia Capital Group a call at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. You take advantage of the advice and the experience of the Brain Trust. You know, your Buckets plan should be tailored to meet your unique goals. The number, once again, Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER. That's an important number because that's how you reach the Brain Trust right now. 877-752-6637. Anything that's on your mind, any money issue you have, we'll be here to talk to you about it. Now, sequence of returns. I said this before. This sounds like some sort of academic theory, some sort of thing that, you know, you might find in an economics class. But first of all, let's take this down to its most simple and say, what are we talking about when we say sequence of returns?
Well, under the category of not all investors are treated equally, you can look at an investment over a period of time, and it says it did a 10% rate of return, an 8% rate of return, a 6%, whatever the rate of return is over the last 20 years. And you can say, well, if I had been in that investment over that 20-year period of time, I would have achieved that rate of return. But that's not always true, because how the return was created and how you treat the investment. Did you go in with a lump sum at the beginning of the period of time and come out at the end of the period of time and do nothing in between but reinvest whatever was earned? That's the only way you're going to get that same rate of return. No money, extra money in, no extra money out, just a buy and hold static over that measuring period. If you had any other investment philosophy going on, you were dollar cost averaging in, you were dollar cost averaging out, you're going to have a very dramatically different rate of return than that listed rate of return over the last 20 years. The issue is not so much when you're getting into it. A lot of people, though, will look at this and say, I'm putting in my 401k and my, you know, I'm putting in my $1,000 a month, whatever it is, $500 a month, and my rate of return according to the investment was an average 10% over the past 20 years. But if I calculate $1,000 a month, $500 a month over that, I didn't get anywhere near that rate of return. Well, how is that? Are they lying to me? No, they're not lying to you. It's how that return was created. In that example, a lot of return may have happened in the beginning years when you didn't have a whole lot of money in the portfolio. And then towards the later, maybe the last 10 years, the return wasn't all that good, but that's where you had the majority of the money. So you didn't experience the better part of that return. On the other side, and where it really affects individuals, where it really affects people is when they're taking money out of a portfolio. What happens in the next 3, 4, 5 years has a dramatic impact on what's going to happen with your portfolio over the rest of your life. If you're a retiree and you're starting to take money systematically is the way most people take money out of a portfolio. They take out a constant dollar a month, or they take out, you know, $10,000 a year, but it's about the same amount either every year or every whatever period they're dealing with. If you're taking money out of a portfolio that has volatility, the return that you receive over the next 2, 3, 4 years will basically dictate the portfolio for the rest of your life. If you happen to retire in or start taking money out of the portfolio at a time where the market is on fire and going up, it's pretty hard to screw it up. If you happen to retire into a market where the market is going down and you do not change your habits, you do not change your spending, and the market goes down and you keep pulling out the money that you need to live every month, it's hard to recover. And there's a high likelihood that you may run out of money before you unfortunately run out of time. The movements in the next 2 to 3 years is going to be a big issue on how well your portfolio can sustain a retirement income.
Yeah, so by the way, 877-PLANNER our number. If you have any questions on anything at all, 877-PLANNER. We got some lines open for you right now. Brain Trust standing by. 877-752-6637. So what we're saying is this. You have a portfolio of X number, $100,000 or something like that, and you retire, and you decide that you're going to start pulling money out on a systematic basis. You got 60% stock, 40% bonds, something like that, and you decide, I'm just going to take, 4% out or 5% out per year, something like that, and you start doing that. But the market, the first few years that you retire, doesn't cooperate. The market takes a nice, healthy dive. Say the first 5 years that you retire, the market somehow is down 3 out of those 5 years.
Meaning like 2000?
Like 2000, 2001, 2002, or 2008, 9, and, part of...
Well, 7, 8, 9, 7 wasn't
seven
a very
wasn't
good year.
7 wasn't that good either, because the last
pretty
part
flat.
Of 7. Yeah, it was flat, and then 8 was a real bad year.
Beginning of 9 was horrible.
Was bad. Okay, so what happens if you're taking money out and those first few years are really bad years for the market? That's not just hurting you from a current standpoint. That is hurting your portfolio possibly for good.
Right. No, it's because you're drawing out assets at a lower value. It's dollar cost averaging in reverse. The benefit of dollar cost averaging is that when we have volatility, when the market goes down, we buy a lot of shares. It's a systematic dollar cost averaging, systematic buy-in. And when that flat dollar amount goes in, when the market's down, we buy a lot of shares. When the market's up, we don't buy very many shares. On average, our share price is lower, the purchase price. But you turn around and do the exact opposite. When the market's down and you need a constant dollar amount, you have to sell more shares. So you sell a lot of the portfolio, which can never recover. And then when the market's up, works okay, you're only selling a few shares to get your income from that source. So reverse dollar cost averaging is the worst thing you can do for a distribution strategy from a portfolio. I saw a study recently where it had a 30-year time horizon where over the 30-year period of time, the hypothetical returns averaged 6.6%. But in the hypothetical A, much of the returns happened in the first 10 years. And then it was fairly flat, and then it was a sharp decline in the last couple of years. But in doing so, somebody starting off with, in this particular hypothetical example, they start off with $250,000, they took out 4% plus inflation every year, and after 30 years, they ended up with like $570,000. And then they did the exact opposite. They took the same returns, the same 6.6% return over a buy and hold strategy, but reversed the order, where instead of the first years being good, the first years were the bad years. Now, they did happen to the first portfolio, but they happened at the end. This time, they're happening at the beginning. And unfortunately, the second hypothetical person, did not end up with $570,000 at the end of 30 years. In fact, they didn't make it 30 years. They ran out of money after about 15 or 20 because the market went down in the first years, which meant that they were selling and selling. So what may have started off as a 4% rate of return, it went into a 5, 6, 7, 8% rate of return. Because every time it went down, they were selling. So not only did that not recover, they had to then make up more of it going down. And so they kept selling on the way down. Now, to get that same dollar amount out, they're taking a much, much, much larger distribution percentage than is a viable option.
So the problem is then what? That in the first example where they didn't run out of money because the bad years happened toward the end of the 30-year cycle as opposed to the beginning, the problem was for the person who had a bad cycle at the beginning, what? They just happened to retire at the wrong time?
Well, they retired at the time they wanted to retire, but the market wasn't being a friend to them. And can anybody tell me what is going to happen with the market over the next 3-4 years? The answer is no. And if somebody says they can tell you, they're lying or guessing or both. It can't happen. So what do you want to do if you want to start taking money out of the portfolio in the next couple of years? Do you want to rely on the market? Kind of a risky area to go.
It sure is, especially if you don't necessarily have the choice as to when you retire, which a lot of people do not. Professor Plum mentioned that illustration. I have the numbers that I just, I've got those standing by. So I'll tell you, get a little bit more concrete in this when we come back and explain to you a strategy that actually might help you alleviate that problem. 877-PLANNER, our number. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the Brain Trust, coming right back. Don't go away. So what if you do retire at the wrong time? And I put that wrong time in sort of air quotes, if I ever made air quotes. Wrong time, what is the wrong time? How do you avoid doing that? And we're going to talk a little bit more about this and tell you how to combat that problem because, you know, you don't always have the choice. As I said before the break, you don't always have the choice as to when you're going to retire. It sometimes is foisted upon you. So we'll talk about that. We got some numbers to deal with there. And let's see, emails as well. That's coming up. If you want to email the program, you can go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link. But let's get back to the phone lines. Got two lines open right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Juan is next up in Miami, Florida. Hey, Juan, thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Well, I was trying to figure out, because we have a couple of rentals, almost covers our expenses. I want to retire early. And I'm trying to figure out, is it worth it to just rely on rental income to retire versus the market?
Well, a lot of people do rely just on rental income, and it somewhat depends on how many renters you have. If you've got a 400-unit apartment complex, then I feel a lot more comfortable about the rental income than I do if I have one tenant in one area. Because if I lose that one tenant, then I lose all my income, right? So just like a stock market portfolio would be diversified and you have a better chance of a fairly consistent return, although volatile from that point, the more rental income sources you have, the more reliable that rental income would normally be. Do I want to rely on it solely? Not if I have a choice. If I have the choice, I'd like to have some good rental income from multiple rentals. I'd like to have a nice bucket strategy in place for other incomes so that because there are times when rental income may not work as well. We saw some times recently, and again, it depends on what type of rentals you're using. Class A office buildings weren't doing so well, then different areas at different times don't do as well. Right now, multifamily housing is just on fire. I mean, if somebody's tried to rent an apartment lately throughout most of the U.S., they're seeing that the rents are going up quite a bit. So, but that isn't always the case. And so having the ability to backstop my rental income in the event that I have a slowdown in rental increases or I have a rash of vacancies for whatever reason, having a bucket strategy, which includes stock market, bond market, cash, and other areas, to have a reliable source of drawdown money there, that gives me a very, very good sleep at night factor. But I do know a lot of people that do it purely on rental income. Now, the idea that they usually end up doing, though, is if they want to have, $5,000 a month in income, they set it up so they've got $8,000 or $9,000 a month in rental income so that if they have a problem, even if they have a 30, 40% problem, they're still being able to cover their monthly needs. So you can do it both ways. I like doing it with both areas if I can.
Well, what's your situation, Juan? What are you looking at here?
Well, I want to retire early at 59, and I'm looking at 7 more years, and I think I can get 1 or 2 more rentals under my belt, and that there should be enough to cover our expenses.
Okay.
So,
I mean, that's one way to do it, but then you're also looking to, I mean, so what you're, what I'm hearing is that if you do it that way, you won't ever be able to build up any other assets from any other source, right?
Exactly. I'll pretty much be where I am right now. I'm looking more of, an aggressive investment and keep my fingers crossed kind of thing, but.
Either way, it's going to be aggressive. A 7 or 8 year period of time is a very short time horizon to build up a big stock portfolio, too. So it may or may not work in 7 years. You would want to, and this is where it comes into an issue, when you retire at 59 or whatever it's going to be, you'd want to be able to use some of the cash flow from the rentals to build up an emergency nest egg, a fairly large one when you have rental incomes. Now, how many rentals do you currently have?
Well, we have two rental incomes from single family homes.
And so you want to add another or two more single family homes?
Yes.
Four single family homes is I don't know, that's not that diversified. It's fairly, you know, tight. And if are you leveraged still, or are these houses paid off?
No, they're paid off. So I have a total, I'm getting a 7% return on my investment.
Okay, 7% cash flow. I would look that I probably wouldn't want to retire until I could retire with the rents from just three of the properties, where if I had one vacant, or maybe even for a short period of time two vacant, I could still make my monthly needs. I would not want to retire that says, as long as these are rented, I can make my needs. But if I can't make it through a while without one of them being rented, that's too tight on my retirement. I'd want to work a little longer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sounds good.
I want some backup money. I want some just in case money. I want a cushion, because retirement isn't just about not working. Although if you have four rental properties, you're probably working your tail off. It's about being able to sleep at night too, and know that, you know, even when there are less than rosy outcomes, that I can still retire and enjoy my life.
You're saying if you lose a renter or two.
Yeah. And the problem with losing a renter, when I only have four to begin with, is if I lose a rental, I lose a chunk of income, 25%, 20% of my income, depending upon how the incomes are laid out. But it also usually requires a capital inflow, I mean, a cash flow. I've got to go in and repair. I've got to paint. I've got to, you know, repair the things that the renters may not. And, you know, just having a deposit doesn't always cover what some renters can do to a place. I know you try to be very careful up front, but sometimes they slip through.
How are these renters you have, Juan?
They're consistent. I mean, we don't have any problems, and
good.
I really can't. I mean, nothing's perfect, but
yeah,
they're reliable. I don't foresee a problem, but.
We've
been doing this for quite some time, too, as well. So
right. So if somebody were to move out, or you lose one or two, would that be a big problem for you?
No. And we're also debating whether to continue like on a part-time basis just to cover our travel expenses just in case.
But, yeah. It comes down to how much effort you want to put into it and how much – I mean, you know rentals. You've been doing it a long time. You're probably very comfortable with rentals. And because of that, and you haven't done much in the stock market or other areas, so you're less comfortable with that area. So you're probably going to be more comfortable sticking with what you know. And like I said, if you can create a rental income that's a lot higher than your needs, then you can probably make it work. And then what you can do is take that excess income that you're getting every month, every year, and build up a secondary source of income through a stock market bucket strategy, you know, cash in other areas.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Juan, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I just like having the backup.
It's nice to have, and you never anticipate anything going wrong, but it's true that if you're owning individual, in this case, individual rentals, houses, condos, whatever it is, you lose one tenant, if you have four, you lose 25%. Plus whatever cash you got to put into the place.
Right, it can put a strain on your cash flow fairly quickly, depending upon how things shake out. That's why the more rentals you have, I mean, the people that I know that have retired on rental properties usually have 10 or 12 or more.
And so if they lose one or two, it's
they're okay.
Not as big of an impact.
Right, it's maybe a 10 or 15%, 20% impact on the overall cash flow rather than a 25 to 30% impact on the cash flow.
Yeah, which is the same issue you have. Why some people prefer to buy some of the really big, you know, pool their money and get into some of the big apartment houses and things like that.
Right, and that's where, you know, you expect to have vacancies. I mean, you run the whole idea that you're going to be at about 90% occupancy. And in fact, if you're 100% occupancy with
you're
a large,
charging enough
you
are, rent.
You need to raise the rents.
Which will, in turn, by the way, create a few vacancies.
But overall, your cash flow will still be better.
That's it. Okay. Juan, I appreciate the call. Great questions. Let's get some more in. We have now three lines open, 877-PLANNER. If you've got a money question of any kind, we will talk to you about it. Doesn't matter what it is. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. It's Bucket Strategy Investing, and we're coming right back. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Come on, come on, come on, give us a call. In fact, I think we have a line open, but I'm not sure. All right, try it. We got a lot of folks on hold, so we're going to get right back to the calls. Let's move along to Larry in Denver, Colorado, up next. Hi, Larry.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Listen, several weeks ago, I talked briefly with Professor Plum about a CRUT, Charitable Remainder Unit Trust.
Yes.
And my wife and I are still looking at that as one of our assets. Howsoever, she wanted to do, she's got a couple favorite private schools and stuff she wanted to give them to while we are still alive.
Okay.
Most of what we saw with the CRUT was it's the remainder after we pass. Now, I'm 75, so she's 68, but she wanted something a little bit more immediate while we were still living.
Okay.
And what's is there any possibility of something like a charitable or a private foundation, would that weigh in at all on as an option?
Well, it sounds like she wants the charity to have immediate access to the funds. She wants to give the money to the charity, and the charity have the money available to the charity for whatever the charity needs to do with it.
Yes.
Right away, right?
Yes. Well, sooner than after our death, absolutely.
Right, and so that's very difficult. For the whole idea of a charitable remainder unit trust is to have asset and turn it into an income stream for me and or my wife, and then when I'm gone, when my wife's gone, to leave whatever's left, hence the name remainder, to the charity.
Yeah, we understand that.
So we're not going to be using any kind of charitable remainder trust or anything like that. So it's very difficult to create an income stream. So either we're charitably inclined and we just want to give it away, where we're not trying to retain an interest in the income or retain an interest or a string to it. If that's the case, then we don't use trust. We just make gifts.
Okay. Then the private foundation would be more of a gift avenue.
The private foundation is for generally larger than just CRTs, 500, a million, 2 million. Foundations are 10, 20, $30 million, where we create an individual foundation for the purpose of giving out charitable events every year. But we're not retaining an income in it necessarily. It may pay us to run it and manage it, but it's still going to be less than what I could have gotten from an income from a charitable from a charitable remainder trust. So they're used for different reasons. A lot of times foundations are used because we want to keep the asset kind of intact, and let the but still want to have an income to be able to give. We still want to make ongoing gifts to charities every year.
I see.
And usually foundations take more money.
The better way to use the CRUT is, say, put our 20-year cap threshold on it. So after 20 years, it does go to the charity.
Typically, they don't use a flat number of years. They use a lifetime. They say for my and my wife's life, it pays us an income every year. And then when both of us die, whether it's 1 year from now or 30 years from now, whatever's left goes to the charity. Although sometimes they will put a term certain on it, but that means that there may be. So what happens if you died after 1 year and the income continues going on to a non-charitable function, your kids or somebody else like that? That means that there's that income stream is still an asset in your estate, and so it doesn't work that well in that for a fixed life.
Okay, that explains it, Professor. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the call, Larry. Charitable remainder uni trusts, or CRUTs as they're known for short.
Or annuity CRUTs, trust, CRATs.
Yeah. You have CRATs and CRUTs and et cetera, et cetera. It gets a little complicated, but that's you know what? We're here to answer whatever questions you have. Okay, let's move along because we've got a lot of folks on hold. 877-PLANNER. Steve, right? Okay, Steve, Las Vegas. Hi, Steve. How can we help you today?
Hey, I just heard the gentleman talking about rental property, and I was just recently I rolled over my defined benefit pension plan into an IRA, and over the last handful of months I've been investing much of that back into ETFs, but I still have quite a bit of cash left, and I was wondering, can I take that cash and through the IRA do a rental property or some kind of investment where I would have that under falling under my IRA, if I'm explaining that right?
No, I understand what you're saying. And legally, yes, you can actually go out and your IRA can buy rental investment properties, individual properties. You have to have a custodian that will allow for it. Now, how old are you, Steve?
57.
57? I mean, I'll tell you up front, I am not a big fan of buying real estate in my traditional IRA. The advantages of owning real estate are that I get appreciation, that I get a cash flow from it, and I also get some tax benefits from it, tax deductions and other things. I don't get those tax benefits if it's in my IRA. One of the other advantages of real estate is leverage in many respects, where I borrow money, and let's say it's a $500,000 house, I put $250,000 down, borrow the other half, and if the property goes up by 5%, I make 10% on my capital, right? And so that leverage can enhance either the return or the negative side of it as well. We saw that too. It's a lot more difficult to have leverage in an IRA, especially when we're using larger properties. That it's just because the IRA by itself is what is qualifying for the mortgage. You are not qualifying for the mortgage. You can't make the payment. The IRA has to make the payment. So I would rather see a little bit different game plan. If possible, buy it personally and use the IRA. Now, you're not 59 and a half yet, but we could do some form of a 72T payout to start taking a distribution from the IRA, avoid the penalty there, and use the distribution to pay the loan on the property I bought personally. The distribution from the IRA is taxable. A lot of the tax benefits from the IRA or from the rental property are going to offset that income. So rather than building up net worth in my IRA that will eventually be subject to a required minimum distribution that will eventually 100% be taxable income to me in the future, I can use the personal asset to give me my tax deductions, get appreciation, long-term capital gains, and if I hold on to it till my death, no taxes on the eventual potential appreciation on the personal property, personal real estate, personal investment property. So I think there's maybe better ways to do it than inside the IRA, but legally you can do it inside the IRA.
Okay. Can I ask you a second question then? If you're not really thinking that's what I should do inside the IRA with these funds, what should I invest in right now with that remainder? And I guess you need a little bit of background too. So in my personal assets, 95% in stocks and EFTs and mutual funds and those things. In my retirement, now that this is cash, I've got about 25% of my portfolio is in cash right now in the retirement vehicle, if you will, or bucket, you like to call it, it sounded like.
Bucket one.
Yeah, so with that pretty significant amount of money, I kind of had bought in some ETFs and some mutual funds and some stocks here in the last handful of months, which obviously it looks pretty good right now. Where would you go with a significant amount of money then if not real estate at this point?
Well, before you start talking about any type of investment product, I would step back and say, I have these funds, my personal monies, my IRA's money, total combined, I've got X amount of dollars. What do I want this to do for me? I need it to drive an income today, and I need an income of X amount of dollars. So let's create a strategy for creating that distribution event so that I can live the way I want to live. And how you invest it, you let the strategy dictate what investments you look for. You don't let the investments dictate your investment strategy. You don't go to the Home Depot because you want to build a new house and see that toilets are on sale and they're a great price, so you buy 50 of them and then try to figure out how to build a house around 50 toilets. You go to the plans first, decide how you want it, you know, how that you want the house to be built, what you want it to look like. Then you go to the place to buy the product and say, I need two of those, three of those, I need one of these, and fit the appropriate investments into the strategy that you're creating for meeting your needs. My opinion, obviously, is going to be buckets. And so you identify how much income you need from the portfolio and when. And you set up different time horizons for that income stream. The money I need to next week, next year, the next couple of years, that, heck, that should be in cash. You can't invest the money over a one-year period of time and do better than cash because you could end up with less
safely.
Money. And so the idea is we need to identify time horizons and then fit the appropriate investments in your strategy. Strategy first.
Okay.
Does that help you out? Okay.
That did.
Okay,
I'll tell
you. Steve, you have any other questions on this? It's buckets, and we talk about this all the time. You can hang on, and we can get you some more information. I got to take a break here. So hang on. Great question so far. It is matching assets to liabilities in that case.
It is. I mean, the whole thing is before, and this is the problem that most people have, that most advisors have. They lead with a product. They have a product that they want to sell, and they find a way to make you want the product they have to sell. But maybe it doesn't really fit with what you're trying to do. Don't start with product, start with strategy, and fill it with the appropriate investments.
That's what we do. Cecilia, Orlando, you're going to be next, as will Eddie in Houston, so don't go away. We just got to take a very quick break. We're going to come back and get both of you on the line, so don't go away. As I said, 877-PLANNER. Everybody on hold. We will answer your questions. Just stick around. And we still have, no, we only have one line open right now. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We're coming right back. Yeah. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Stand by for more than just this. There's another hour coming up in many, if not most, cities across the country of this program. So stick around, as I said, a lot more to talk about. We still have all the sequence of return stuff we didn't get to. And your phone calls. That's right, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Okay, we're going to get to everybody before the top of the hour. Cecilia, you are up next. Thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a question. I worked for about 30 years, and then I quit working to stay home with my kids. But I'm concerned because I haven't contributed anything to my Social Security benefits. So when I retired, I'll have enough money to, you know, well, not enough money to retire on, but at least to pull out a decent amount of retirement income. So how do I go about maybe contributing to my Social Security benefits?
Well, how old are you?
I'm not working.
How old are you, Cecilia?
I'm 53,
and you already have 30 years of work on the books?
I pretty much. Yeah, I started working in the early 80s, 79, 80.
Okay. I would look and see what my Social Security benefit is projected to be, assuming I didn't work anymore. And the reality is the only way to pay into the Social Security system is to work and pay FICA taxes, or to be self-employed and pay self-employment taxes. But if you've already put 30 good years on the books, now they only take 35 years to, they use your best 35 years, I would look to see what my benefit is projected to be. If it's $1,500, $1,600, $1,800 a month, the amount of money that you would have to pay in taxes to get a bigger benefit probably is not worth it. Now, if my benefit was only $400 or $500 a month, which would be very interesting with 30 years of work in the field already, then it might make some sense, but the only way to do it is to get a job or to create self-employment income and pay self-employment taxes.
Well, I am pretty much self-employed. I have, and I know you've been talking about rental properties. I own 3 rental properties, and they're all paid for, so that's pure income. And when my husband files, you know, we file all the all the income that we receive with the IRS.
Right.
So I don't know if I can use that.
It's not. That's passive income, and it is not subject to the Social Security tax. And so, so some people will create corporations and pay themselves salaries so that they can create this, you know, additional Social Security. But the reality is, depending upon what your benefit is now, the amount of money that you have to pay in Social Security taxes is probably not worth it for the increase in the benefit that you might receive. Do you know what your Social Security benefit is projected to be when you ultimately get out to 62, 66, 67, whatever your full retirement age is?
Kind of, because I receive those little pamphlets they send you in the mail every couple of years showing you what you'll be getting when you retire.
Okay, and what does it say you're going to get?
Oh, I haven't. to be honest with you, I don't know, because it's been a while since I got the last one.
First step that I would do is go online at my Social Security Administration, SSA.gov, and do the retirement estimator. Run the estimate. Mm-hmm. And when it asks for how much your income was last year, put zero. And it'll project zeros going all the way through your retirement dates, 62, full retirement age, and 70. And let's get an idea of what your benefit looks like already. And then we can take a look at, okay, from a cost-benefit analysis, does it even make sense to pay more in Social Security taxes to increase your benefit by a couple percent?
Right, right, right. So my husband's income, and when he retires, I don't benefit from that either.
Well, there is a spousal benefit, and so reality is, if we're going to put new self-employment income on something, it may be better to put it on his, which will raise up his benefit probably maybe more than yours, but we'd have to look. But it's a lot of tax. It's 15% of your earned income, and you're only going to do it for a couple more years. And if you've already got a reasonable benefit in the books, it takes a lot of income to increase that.
Yeah, it may not be worth it. I tell you what, Cecilia, I got to get one more call before the top of the hour. If you want to hang on a second, I can bring you back when we get into the news here in a few minutes. So if you can hang on, we'll talk to you a little bit more about this if you have some more questions. I just need to get to one more call before the top of the hour. So hold on, if you would. I appreciate that. But we need to get to Eddie in Houston, Texas. Hi, Eddie. How can we help you today?
Yes, I called yesterday about the deductible IRA.
Yeah, yes.
Yes, the guy started in 2010, 2011. He deducted the IRA contributions above the threshold.
Just those 2 years?
Yes. No. From 10, 11, 12, 13.
All the way through.
14, well, 2010 and 11, you can't basically undo it. And the reality is, if the IRS hasn't caught you yet, they probably won't. But I don't want to live off of that angle. There's really nothing you can do about it. How do you undo it?
Well, you can't.
You can't undo it. You can't amend that return. I don't know how to undo that. You would have to get with a tax preparer, a CPA, an enrolled agent that knows what they're doing in front of tax court. But the reality is, I, at this point, if it were me, I probably wouldn't do anything about those. I would adjust the later ones. Until the IRS sends you a letter and says, hey, you deducted it when you weren't supposed to, I don't think there's anything you can do about it. 13, 14.
2012, you can still amend that return, correct?
I'm sorry, what?
2012,
you can amend still.
And change it to non-deductible, correct?
And turn it to a non-deductible contribution. 12, 13, 14, you turn to non-deductible contributions, but you've only got a couple more days up until April 18th to amend the 2012 return.
What about the contribution he made for 2015?
The 2015 contribution, it'll be a non-deductible one. So you'll file 8606 along with your tax return when you file your 15 return. The reason it's non-deductible is because the individual has a 401k that they're participating in, and their income is all over $200,000. And so they are not allowed to have a deductible traditional IRA. They are allowed to contribute to an IRA. They're allowed to contribute because they have earned income and they're under 70 and a half. So they've made the contribution. So you, with the 2015 contribution, you're either going to classify it as a non-deductible contribution, or you can pull that one back out. You can undo the 2015 if you don't want to make that contribution as a non-deductible contribution. You still have time. 14, you can't undo. 13, you can't undo. Those previous to that, you can't undo. You just have to show them as non-deductible. 15, you either show it as a non-deductible contribution, or you take the money out.
Okay. You cannot transfer those amount you made earlier on into 401k?
Well, you can transfer it to a 401k, but the problem still is there. They deducted it on their 2010 and 11 return when they weren't allowed the deduction.
Yeah. Eddie, listen, hang on if you need to, because we can talk to you during the 11 o'clock news, during the top of the hour news, wherever you happen to be. I guess it's 1 o'clock where you are. 1 o'clock news. If you have some more questions, need some clarification, hang on. We'll be happy to talk to you. We got to take a break. We're going to come back for more. If you need the folks at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Talk to Professor or any of them. We're coming right back with more. Don't go away.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.